Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Chris Evans here, and welcome once again to the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio. Coming up on the show, the sublime Simon Pegg fills us in on his brand new Channel 4 drama, The Undeclared War. The hilarious David Mitchell shares all about starring in the brilliant Ben Elton production Upstart Crow, Taken to the Stage. Musical power couple Sophie Ellis-Bextor and Richard Jones from The Feeling take us through their new cookbook, their first ever cookbook together. They are a couple, and now they're a couple who have a cookbook, love food and family. And brilliant BAFTA sensation Big Zoo tells us about his latest show, Big Zoo's Big Eats on Dave, a double BAFTA, a double BAFTA award-winning show on Dave. All of that and so much more to come. So Vassos, kick things off and tell us, please, who is up first?
He once worked in the cloakroom at TFI Friday, and now he's fast becoming a national treasure who Peep shows us time and again how ridiculously funny he is. The stage version of the smash hit TV show Upstart Crow hits the West End in September, so please welcome a whip-smart beau. It's David Mitchell!
The Upstart Crow is the name of the stage play. Upstart Crow is the name of the telly show. For people who have no idea what we might be talking about, can you enlighten them, please?
Well, it's a comedy about William Shakespeare, in which I put on a wig and a bald cap and pretend to be William Shakespeare. And we did it at a sitcom on the TV, and then we did a stage show of it that got closed down when the lockdown started. And so we're coming back to finish off what we started. And it was a show I'm extremely proud of. It was going really well. It's really funny. And I was very upset that we had to stop. And I'm thrilled that we can come back and do it.
All right. Tell us where the super funny feel comes from with regards to this production. Because I agree with you. I mean, I'm a big fan of the TV show. But for people who don't know, again, just tell them.
Well, it was Ben Elton has written it. And he basically reimagined William Shakespeare as a comedy character, as someone who had all the hallmarks of a classic sitcom character. He had aspirations and he had fears. He's a middle-aged man trying to make it in the world. He thinks he's a talented person who should be celebrated by the universe, but also he's frightened. He's frightened of the Queen. He's frightened of being being disgraced. He's resentful of all the posh other playwrights who he thinks look down on him and who called him an upstart crow. So he's caught there in the middle, sort of in that rictus of aspiration and jeopardy that your classic comic character's in. He was in the 1590s in the TV show, and we joined him in the stage show in the reign of James the First, just soon after regime change, which will be, I think, in this autumn, a timely feel. And he's struggling to make it in the world and get the credit he thinks he deserves.
Now, you know, we know Ben Elton is super clever anyway, but how well must he know his Shakespeare to then play with the bard like he has done in Upstart Crow?
Oh, I think he knows Shakespeare inside out. And I think he's also, because of the Shakespeare in the 16th century, he basically commuted from Warwickshire to London. He was forever going to and fro and having trouble getting between Warwickshire and London. And Ben Elton himself has a similar length of commute because he lives in Australia. So he has fellow feeling for a man that takes 3 days to get to work.
Yeah, no, it's so cool. Right, David, so the TV show was Upstart Crow. This is The Upstart Crow. Is it a distilled, is it a sort of a magnified version of the television programme? Is it the best things that we saw on the telly? Is it abridged? The new things? What else could you tell us about
it? It's all new. It's an entirely new play written about Shakespeare a few years later than the TV show in 1605. And he's struggling, having not written a decent play since Elizabeth I died. And it's a totally new, self-contained comic play. And we did it just before lockdown, and it's a cracker. And I've never been prouder to be in a show.
Good for you, mate.
It really flew. So I'm just can't wait to do it again.
Yeah, and you're not just saying it because I can definitely feel it, you know, in your words, you know, and via your voice. The complexity of Shakespeare. How do you think, as a student of Shakespeare yourself, how do you think he knew all those things? How do you think he was able to sort of weave such sort of sophistication together with, you know, more articulately than anybody had ever been before or has been since, and put in the wit and the wonder and the wisdom and all these phrases we now take for granted every day?
Well, sometimes a genius is born. That's the thing. Sometimes someone is born and they're Mozart, or they're Stephen Hawking, or they're Einstein, or they're Ben Elton. And I think William Shakespeare may have been the greatest of them. And he was just born with a talent for writing like no one else who's ever lived. And he was a random man born in Warwickshire to a glover's family. But, you know, he was fortunately taught to read and write. And he just had enormous talent and enormous empathy and poetry. And it's one of the things that makes me happiest to be a human being, that we know that people can just be born and they are brilliant.
Brilliant.
And, you know, it's the same with sports people. Some people, they have to practice, but also there are some sports people, they're just better than everyone else.
Yep.
Bradman was 30% better at batting than anyone else who's picked up a cricket bat. And it just comes from God or nature, or call it what you like. But it's one of the things that makes the human race worth persevering with.
Wow. What a lovely conversation. Thank you for being on the other end of it, David. Great to talk to you at the Upstart Crow, London's Apollo Theatre, Friday, 23rd of September until Saturday, the 3rd of December. Break a leg, my friend. Upstart Crow.
Thank you very much.
Great to talk to you, David. Bye-bye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
He's given us Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead, but this GCH cutie's latest escapade might just be his most realistic and most terrifying yet. The Undeclared War continues on Thursdays at 9 p.m. on Channel 4, and here to tell us about a show so spooky it might make you finally update your antivirus, it's the superb Simon Pegg!
Hi, Simon!
Wow, what an intro.
How are you doing?
I'm really good, thanks, Chris.
You look like this building feels...
It's Friday morning. I thought I might as well.
It's very La La today. It's very La La Land. We are hotter than Los Angeles today.
Are we?
Yeah.
Wow.
Officially. It's cool, isn't it? Well, it's cool. It's hot is what it is. How are you doing?
I'm okay, man. Yeah, it's nice to see you.
Congratulations on the Undeclared War. Why don't you give us the elevator pitch for people who haven't seen it and need to get to this party?
The Undeclared War is a gripping thriller about a cyber attack on the UK, all from the point of view of a young intern who's gone to work in a placement at GCHQ, who, through her prodigious talents, manages to identify more within the malware than is immediately apparent. And it's extremely prescient because it takes place in 2024. Boris has been ousted. I mean, how kind of topical can you be?
I bet you were, well, not, I don't know, I don't want to put words into your mouth, but I bet you were thrilled from a show point of view with how the week's events have unfolded. I don't know from a personal point of view, and do you know what? I don't want to know from a personal point of view. It's such a heady and hot take mix to get involved in at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Peter Kosminski, who's the writer-director, is such an intelligent guy. He's a brilliant dramatist, and he researched this show so carefully for 3 years, about cybersecurity, about the kind of risks that are involved, the kind of dangers we are in, you know.
Yeah.
And it's frightening how close he is to the truth.
It is frightening, but also the way these genius writers are so prescient, because we've wondered about this before. Ben Elton used to do this a lot in his books. You know, he was 3 years ahead of the curve, and he wrote a book about something that it was unthinkable, or, you know, something we didn't necessarily want to think about because it might happen, but it probably wouldn't. And like gridlock and things like that, they all tended to happen. And I asked him, how come you can tell the future? And he said, not of himself because he's too modest, but it is definitely of himself and your genius writer as well, is that they see patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, and it's like physics, quantum physics. You see patterns and you think, well, this is bound to happen because we've seen these patterns before, and how this cannot not happen.
Yeah, and this is kind of about what the show's about in terms of the adversary involved is doing exactly that by predicting everything that we as a country will do in response to what's happening. One of the most interesting things that I discovered, which I think everybody should know, which is that there are troll farms in Russia where there are people just on Twitter pretending to be British, being very au fait with British slang hashtags and starting arguments on Twitter, which are then retweeted by bots, and then real British people get involved, thinking that they're involved in some kind of debate, which turns ugly. Things get divisive, the discourse just becomes shouting, and it destabilizes our society. And that's actively happening.
Yeah, and it's for free, more or less. Whereas, you know, you used to have to send a missile to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Back in the 60s and 70s. You know, and it's not unheard of. And they just chance their arm. You know, they'll come up with 10 really sort of incendiary statements an hour per bot or per person. And they put it out there and something might catch light. It's not dissimilar to what Saddam Hussein did, you know, in his death throes, as far as Desert Storm was concerned, when he scorched Kuwait. Do you remember what he did?
Yeah, yeah.
He went around and he lit the oil fires, and it took him 1 second to light these. So, so what's happening with the bots is a metaphorical version of what he did. It took a second to light an oil rig on fire, and it took forever to put them out.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing, but it's via a keyboard warrior.
Yeah, it's information wars, and information is power. And really, really now it's becoming about not who's telling the truth, but who's telling the biggest lie the loudest. You know? And that's terrifying.
Yeah, so it's disruption, you know, plus, isn't it?
Yeah.
And as you say, it's confusion and chaos, and that instills panic. And then, you know, as we're witnessing, I am surprised, I don't know about you, Si, but I'm surprised more of this isn't going on, because it's so easy and inexpensive for evil.
I think it is, more than we know. That's the thing, is that it's happening. If you go online today to have a chat about what's happening in politics at the moment, the chances are you will engage with a foreign adversary without realizing it, because it's so pervasive, and other places are all over it, you know. And it's this show kind of really demonstrates nothing in the show hasn't happened or hasn't been wargamed by our sort of Ministry of Cyber Defense. It's pretty scary, and I think people should be aware of it.
What else is going on? Anything else you want to say to the world as they listen in their droves?
There's a lovely animation coming out in August called Luck, which will be on Apple TV Plus. Which the trailer for that dropped yesterday. And it's a really sweet movie about a lucky black cat called Bob, played by me, and a girl who gets sucked into the land of luck. Watch the trailer; it explains it all.
I love the land of luck.
It's lovely.
You come back and talk about it more if you want.
I'd love to, man.
Now that I know you're only in Hertfordshire, I can give you a lift.
I know. Everybody thinks I live in LA. I don't.
But you cut the gym of somebody who lives in LA. Because, you know, it's not what you wear. It's who you are, people.
Exactly.
That's what it's all about. Please, will you watch our first Before the Show today? So every day I make a 59-second film.
Yes.
It's called the Before the Show. I make it before the show, but now they're so complicated, they don't usually happen until after the show, but they're still called Before the Show. And today's is our first ever two-reel deal.
Oh, wow.
Okay, 2 59-second reels. It's the pre-prep for my colonoscopy.
Oh, so I've had one as well.
Yeah, so you went through the bowel prep.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I quite liked
it. You put that on the...
I don't mind. I don't mind
Chris,
it.
Chris, what are you doing?
No, I put that on, right? But I've also... I didn't have any sedation, so I meditated during it. So
you did?
Yeah, so I could talk and film it and the surgeon with
I am so impressed.
It's all there, mate.
It's all there.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Their live stream discos might have saved us during lockdown, but I've got a feeling that boogieing isn't the only thing these two can do in the kitchen. Here to tell us all about their brand new book, Love, Food, Family, and hopefully not burn this goddamn house right down, it's the murderously marvellous Sophie Ellis-Bexter and Richard Jones.
Good morning, you two.
Good morning.
There's the cookie cake. Tell us about the cookie cake, Soph.
So the cookie cake is one of the recipes that's actually... So this is a family cookbook and lots of our family are represented. And actually the cookie cake is my sister Martha's recipe.
Ooh.
Yeah, she did it for Kit's birthday, was it, a few years back? And it was met with gasps of delight because it's
literally
beautiful.
A giant cookie.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so that's why we thought we'd bring it, because it's a good communal one when everybody can break a bit off.
It looks like a giant cookie with a bit of rocky road thrown in just for good measure, you know.
Yeah, nice.
It's looking very pretty.
I actually really
want some right now.
Doesn't have to be bad to be better. Right, Rich, tell us about appearing live cooking on telly, because, you know, playing on TV, you've done that many, many times before. That could throw people into some kind of appearance anxiety if they've not done it before, but you have. Talking on telly, some people feel uncomfortable with that. But cooking on telly, I mean, come on, man.
It was actually very nerve-wracking. I don't think I've felt that nervous since probably Wembley Stadium. There's moments in your career where you're like, hang on a minute, I've never done this
before. Well, tell us about Wembley Stadium first.
The Diana Tribute Concert back in 2007, was it? Or six? We played that with The Feeling, and at the time, it was by far the biggest show we'd ever done.
Of course.
And it was live on TV, and as we were walking on stage with no sound check, the producer said, "We've just heard there's a billion people watching live." So not only are you playing to about 90,000.
What did he say that for?
Yeah.
I know. You don't want to know, do you?
No, here's what you should have said. We've just heard the signal's gone down.
just entertain the crowd for us.
Yeah, so I think with music, once we'd done that, everything else seemed a little bit kind of, you know, less nervous.
Yeah, and that was with thousands of live music playing hours under your belt.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas cooking on live TV, we didn't actually do any practice demo?
No.
So I've seen clips of it, but with the sound down, and I had a very busy day yesterday because I had cameras on my back passage.
Sound down is fine. Okay.
You don't want to sound up while that's happening.
No, not really, to be honest. So what did you make?
We did pulled pork tacos.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, with some rainbow slaw, which is our birthday feast of choice because we're born 4 days apart. So... like this year, it was very typical. We had about 20 of our mates round. We cook a big one of these. So it's a massive shoulder of pork. And then you slow cook it until it all falls apart. And then you can put it in your little tacos. And yeah, we did that.
Yeah, it's guacamole, really salsa, little pickled red onion.
So how did it go on the bounce?
I actually thought it was cool. I get more nervous about talking, like doing interviews on live telly.
Right.
So for me, chopping stuff, I was like, well, I'm doing something. I felt quite chilled.
It was a useful distraction.
Yeah. I'm used to having just a bass guitar in front of me and a front person in front of me, like Sophie or Dan from The Feeling, doing all the talking stuff. So for me, it was completely out of my...
Also, you did probably more of the talking because you would commanded the...
Commanded.
Fork.
I like that word.
Yeah.
How did it go down?
It was really, I mean, you know, Holly and Phil were very, very supportive and enthusiastic. So, yeah, I think no matter what, they're going to make nice noises.
I mean, they acted like they really liked it.
Can anything go wrong with pork? I mean, pork is the one thing you can overcook, can't you? You have to sort of, if you have a catering establishment, you have to be on the verge of illegality for it to be enjoyable. Not edible, but enjoyable. You know, and I think if food inspectors came into certain places, they'd say you can't serve it that rare because it's pork. But you sort of have to, in a way. It's a bit like tuna.
The slow cooking, which we do, is actually about, you can cook it for as long as you like.
Right.
So you start it off really hot so you can get the crackling crispy on top.
Right.
And then turn it straight down to about 160 for 4 hours, then down to 140 for another 2 hours. But once it's at 140, you could leave it for as long as you like.
So low and slow.
Low and slow. When it's done, it just falls off the boat.
We've literally done it for 12 hours before, haven't we? Put it on the night before and got up in the morning.
You can't go wrong. And
it's so good.
It's very cooked, yeah.
Thanks for coming in today. I know you've got a busy weekend. Well done on the telly yesterday. You smashed it. People can watch it again. It's all over everywhere. I give my love to Tunbridge Wells and Pub in the Park today, which is going to be awesome. Have a fantastic weekend. Are you appearing on any weekend telly promotion?
We're gigging this weekend, aren't we?
Yeah. We're up to Newcastle.
They asked me to go on Saturday Kitchen next Saturday to talk about Carfest North and South. And I can't because I'm busy, but they should book you two to talk about that and to talk about your book. They clearly have a slot.
I think we're on holiday, but
I think you might have to not be on holiday. It's you're peddling your wares, young man, is what you're doing.
We'll go and cook cookie cake.
Thanks so much. We're going to have some cookie cake now. We'll get that on Insta and we'll get our reaction to it. Thank you, Rachel, for being amazing. You're amazing. I love you. I do. I love you. Thanks to the team.
A lot of love today. I'm happy.
Look, it's Friday. Sun's out. You know, I've got the all clear with the old camera up the bum. Have you seen the video yet?
Yes.
What do you think?
I'm very happy for you. Had a good outcome.
I'm very happy for you and your anus.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
He's a big star with a big show and two big BAFTAs whose acceptance speeches went stratospheric. The new series of Big Zoos, Big Eats returns to Dave on Mondays at 10 p.m. So take a pew. This is quite a queue. Coo, we joined the queue. Who knew? And woohoo, voulez-vous? We got Big Zoo!
Goodness, that's over. Hello, Zoo.
That's a great intro. Thank you so much, man.
Yeah, he nearly made it to the end as well. Big Z, for people who don't know about your show, just shout it out, will you, from the top of the tower. What is it? Where is it? How is it? Who's involved in it?
We cook for celebrities from a food truck, me and my two friends from secondary school, and we just go all over the nation. We go from the bottom to the top of the UK and we cook for some of the greatest people that have ever lived.
Now, you love life, you love people, you love your mum to death.
I do love her a lot.
You love your music, you're an amazing and accomplished musician, and you are this killer chef. How did all those things occur in your life and whereabouts on that journey?
Oh, it's been a lot. I guess I'm really lucky that a lot of my hobbies I'm able to make money from. You know, I've made a career from doing the things that I love, and I feel like that's kind of like reflected in the times that we're in. You know, social media is a big key, and I've been able to use that to create a career of it, so I'm very lucky.
So tell us about the cooking aspect. When did you first... I mean, obviously, your mum is your hero in many, many walks of life.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, from young, I've always been a young fat boy. People say big boned, I say no, just fat man. And my mum was pregnant with my little bro when I was 10. So when she was coming towards the end of her pregnancy, she wasn't cooking a lot in the house. So I thought, let me help out by boiling some pasta and microwaving some pasta sauce. And it ended up coming up all right. And then that kind of feeling of accomplishment, that nice feeling of cooking for my mum and helping around the house, made me keep going. Then I did cooking in school, GCSEs, big up Miss Boucher. And that's why I cooked with Tubbsy and Hyder, who are on the show with me as well. So we cooked in school together. And now we have a really good cooking show.
So you do have an amazing cooking show. And, you know, it's because it wears its skill very lightly on its sleeve. But you can tell from your knife skills and things that are going on that there is some real sort of, you know, some practice that's gone on there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we can cook. A lot of people are surprised when they find out that we can actually cook. But, you know, we've doing 3 seasons of Big Eats, you know, doing, we had a breakfast show on ITV. We work a lot with different types of food. We cook a lot of courses for a lot of people in high-pressured environments. So, no, I'm not Marcus Waring, and I'm not Gordon Ramsay, but, hey, I don't just boil eggs.
Yeah, and they're not you either. That's
they're
the
not
whole
me,
point.
No, unfortunately.
That is the whole point. So you knew pals from secondary school. You know, tell people more about those guys.
Oh, Tubbsy and Hyder. When I did the pilot for Big Eats, which is like the first little episode they do, like a trial run in non-TV terms, they wanted me to do it with some beautiful co-hosts that were like already established, already like within the industry. No one could turn up on a day because everyone was busy. So I said, why don't we just get my 2 friends, Tubbsy and Hyder? The channel were going a bit crazy. They were very worried because Tubbsy and Hyder had no social media, no experience within anything to do with that world. But did the pilot, went really well. And they said, you know what? Give him a job. And yeah, 3 years later, they're BAFTA winners, right, which doesn't make sense.
So each episode is like half an hour-ish long, between sort of 27 minutes, 33 minutes long.
Yeah.
And so what happened, again, for people who haven't seen it, so what happened, you land somewhere and then what?
So we meet a celebrity.
Yeah.
So the episode of Johnny Vegas aired yesterday. So we met Johnny Vegas up in Stockport and we basically go to where they're from or where they are at the time.
Where they're doing their thing.
Yeah. And then we meet them, we kind of explore the city, explore the area, find out what's the local produce, speak to the celebrity. We're meeting Johnny Vegas at the time. They cook for us. So they cook. Johnny Vegas made us a halal spam burger with a gochujang glaze. Never thought I'd ever say that. It was a good burger. And then we make a 3-course meal for Johnny Vegas. We go sit down. We sat down in a nice fish and chip restaurant and turned it into a Big Zoo restaurant. And then we just eat and talk about the food that he loves and his life. And
yeah, but also he's up to stuff as well. So he's looking at, because he loves vintage stuff, doesn't he? And so then your pals go off and join him for a bit and have a bit of fun. Have you seen that show American Pickers?
Yes, I have.
I thought, hang on a minute, like they're picking here. This is what they're doing.
It was a bit like that,
I loved it.
We got to go to the Vintage Emporium and look at some collectibles. I called them antiques. He said, no, they're collectibles.
Yeah.
And we get to like dive into things that the people love. Like, so we do different things with different people. So the next episode is Catherine Ryan, and she just had a baby. So the episode's around us like doing shopping for her baby. And then we go to her house and take over her house. And yeah, each episode is different. We go to different places doing different things. Like Lucy Bowman, we ended up in Hull around a random shopping center. Like it is so random. Like series one, we flew to Isle of Man to cook for Josh Widdicombe, and we ended up going to a creamery in the Isle of Man. So, like, the show could take anywhere, but what's beautiful about it is we are three young British Muslim man, and we're going around the UK doing the most British things. So it breaks down so many boundaries, and then we open so many doors to different cultures and foods. And I think that's why people like it, because
they like it. It's brilliant for so many reasons. And when you just then began that little explanation with what's beautiful about it is, well, I was going to think, well, everything is beautiful about this show. It is so, so good. It's funny. It's sensitive, you know. And also, you do want to cook the stuff,
yeah.
Right? So because what you did with Johnny, you got to watch Johnny. Just watch them all. This is a brilliant show, but Johnny's episode is the latest episode. It's the first episode of season 3, and Johnny requests stuff. So you find out, it's a bit like Saturday Kitchen. What do you like? What do you love? Yeah. What do you hate? And then you sort of accommodate that, but then you surprise them as well. So yeah, you try and educate them back. So give us a flavour of what Johnny liked and what you may have included, and then what you surprised him with.
So, I mean, Johnny loves Guinness. That was one of his number one standout
Guinness
things.
Gravy.
Loves a Guinness gravy. So we made him a keg of Guinness gravy that he drank straight from the barrel, and made him like a nice bit of lamb breast with 30 garlic clams, because he loves clams and mussels and all these things. So we made him the stuff that he likes. But then he spoke to me about his parents making him this pea and lentil soup.
Yeah.
How much he loved it and how much he wished he learned how to make it.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of something that my mum made me, which is a pepper soup. So instead of making him a pea and lentil soup, I made him a West African, very spicy pepper soup.
Yeah.
And he absolutely loved it, because what was so good for him was that he's like, you learnt this recipe from your mum while she's still here. And it got a bit emotional, and it kind of reminded him of all his memories, but he also got to taste something new. And yeah, it was really spicy. He went red, but hey. We gave Harry Redknapp Scotch Bonnet for the first time, so anything's possible.
Big Zoo, it is a real pleasure to meet you. We've all been excited about meeting you this morning. We couldn't be happier that you are everything and more that we hoped and dreamed you would be.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Awesome to meet you. Big Zoo's Big Eats, Dave, Mondays, 10 p.m. Tonight, BBC Three again.
Hungry for it.
All right. Okay. Well, the TV world remains very hungry for this guy. He's going to go all the way. Wait till America gets hold of him.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
All right, so I hope you'll agree we've heard from a bunch of incredible guests already, but still to come. Legend of the screens, big and small, Miriam Margolyes takes us through the paperback copy of her book without trying to swear on the radio. This Much Is True is the title of the book. It's a great read. She's a wonderful human being, and it was lovely to talk to her. The greatest sports commentator currently known to sports spectator fankind, David Crofty Croft, looks ahead to the Austrian Grand Prix, but very much back at the Silverstone Grand Prix too, and I guild him with more professional compliments that he clearly can cope with. Rugby royalty Will Greenwood tells us what to expect from this year's Festival of Sport. The Queen of LA, Kyle Richards, shares all about the latest series of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, and Talk TV's Piers Morgan gives us the weekly update on his show Uncensored. But to be honest, mostly we talk about sport. Let's get right back to it now, Vassos. Who's next?
She's been on our tellies, stages and big screens since the 60s, and in her 80s, she's better and busier than ever. Her memoir, This Much Is True, comes out in paperback tomorrow, so please welcome the BAFTA winner, the miracle, the marvel, the Miriam Margolyes!
Hello, Miriam.
Good heavens, Gwendolyn. how amazing. I've never been introduced like that.
Good.
I'm very touched.
Well, you deserve it more than most. And everybody gets that anyhow, but you truly deserve it. So much to talk about, Miriam. I don't really know where to start, to be honest.
As I reminded you, Chris, we last met when you worked for The Other Side.
Yes, that's right.
And you say it was 4 years ago.
4 years ago, yeah. The view wasn't as good. The people were still amazing. The job was fantastic. But this is our new home, and you're very welcome, Miriam
Margolyes. Thank you. Well, it's lovely to be with you.
It says here, I'm 80. Suddenly I'm 80. You're 81 now. How can that possibly be? 80 is old. 80 means maybe 5, maybe 10 years left. Tell me about that. Tell me about that mindset.
It's an awareness that time is running out.
Mm.
And when you're young, and even when you're middle-aged, you don't think like that. You think you've got acres left. But I haven't. So I've got to get on with it. I've got to make life work for me. And as I've got older, I've got fatter, I've got less mobile, you know, all the things crowd on you. So you have to really lift yourself to meet the challenges of being alive.
Yeah, but you wouldn't change a thing, though, I presume.
oh, I'd like to be 45 again.
No, but you wouldn't change a thing leading up to this point. Because
no, because I'm having a wonderful time.
And you're busy and you're still working at 81. You're still in demand, Miriam Margolyes.
I am. Do you know, I'm going on from here to other interviews and I'm writing another book. And people want me, and
they
I can't believe it, this old bag.
They've always wanted you. You say here, why do I still feel so unsure about things at the age of 81? But that's very sort of Socratic, isn't it? You know, the one thing he ended up knowing is that he knew nothing. And I suppose that is that where you get to in the end?
Yes, you realise you don't know anything. And, you, and I want to know things. So I'm still curious. I still ask questions, just like you do. That's our job.
Yeah, I
love
it.
To find things out.
Because, you know, that's been sort of, in the second half of your career, you have made those kind of films where you go around the world and you become the inquisitor, the inquisitive inquisitor. And
I'm a documentarian now.
You are a documentarian and you love it.
I've been called other things. But
you say here about Cambridge, I went up to Cambridge in October 1960, and that's really when my life started. What do you mean by that?
Well, when you're at school, you're just not really a person yet.
Right.
I was interested in everything. I had wonderful friends, and I went to the best school in the world, Oxford Girls High School. It was a bit posh, and that's why I have this awful posh voice, which I wish I didn't, because it cuts me off from other people. But I wasn't really me. But when I went to Cambridge, I thought, well, poo, or words to that effect, I'm going to be me. I'm trying so hard not to be a naughty girl.
I know. What does it say here? It says, one of your teachers said, you were naughty but never...
Wicked. I was never wicked.
Yes.
And I'm not wicked.
No, you're
I
not
know
wicked.
Who is wicked. Somebody in 10 Downing Street.
Yeah, you talk about politics a lot, don't you?
Yes, I do.
And it's almost, you might be getting what you wish for, because you dedicate a chapter to He Who Shall Not Be Named. You can name him if you want, I don't really mind. But it seems to be going your way today.
I think people are waking up to the fact that we have a liar in charge and we can't have that. England mustn't be famous for having liars.
Britain,
I suppose. Britain, yes.
Yeah, the UK.
Well, I want to be European, you see. I'm one of the Ramonas.
You talk about Brexit a lot, don't you? And
I do, because it's affected my life.
And it's made you sad. And it made lots of people sad, you know. And, you know, was it ever really needed? We found out the fact that we'd voted to leave the European Union when we were broadcasting live from Glastonbury. Yeah. It was really weird. You know, what a strange place to find that out on the radio. And we woke up to... we couldn't believe it. Nobody could really believe it. Not even Nigel Farage could believe it, you know, because he went home from his own party before it started because he thought that they'd lost and Remain had won. But we woke up the next day, Miriam, in Glastonbury, and we were all a bit shell-shocked, to say the least. And then at 7:45, we got a message in our headphones saying, we think the Prime Minister's going to resign. And it all went pear-shaped, didn't it? And it has been for a good while.
It has been. Well, for me personally, it's been a disaster, because it means I have a lovely house, the first house I ever bought, and I can't go and live there for more than 180 days.
Is this the house that you seduced? Who was it? You were auditioning with someone. You wanted to get on the same level as them, and so you handed out pictures of your house in Europe, asking them would they like to rent it before you auditioned. Is that a true story?
It's a true story.
Can you just recount that briefly for us, if you don't mind?
Well, I was up for a role in a film. Auditioning for Steven
Spielberg, wasn't it? That's right.
Yes,
yeah.
And I hate going into any situation not being top dog. I don't want to have to kowtow to people. It upsets me.
Or at least on a level playing field.
A level.
Yeah.
I want to be level. Mm. And I'm so short and fat and not pretty. And you're never level when you're
pretty.
Like that. So I thought, poo. I thought.
So you had basically makeshift brochures of your house.
Yes, I had one-page brochures with a picture and the price.
Before we go any further with this audition, Mr. Spielberg, would any of you like to rent my house for the summer in Europe?
That's exactly what I said.
And what was their reaction, their response?
Well, they were very interested and surprised. And, of course, that made them think of me as a person.
Yeah, as
because I was a house owner.
Yeah.
They treated me with more respect. I didn't get the part,
but I got their
respect.
That's great to see. You're awesome.
Thank you.
You're really awesome. Well done. I mean, still as busy as a bee at 81. Wow. Vassos, let's hope we get half the offers that Miriam's getting now on an hourly basis for the whole of our 80s.
Well, exactly that. And, you know, Heather, who was promised that you wouldn't be indiscreet, let's just hope she doesn't read the in therapy chapter.
Yeah. She clearly hasn't.
She hasn't read.
No. She thinks this is a work of fiction. Right, 1 minute past nine. Got to go. That's Miriam Margolyes. This Much Is True. It's out tomorrow and it's a fantastic beach read.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Here we go. Over to Vassos.Alexander on Instagram and out on the radio.
He makes a career out of controversy, but even he may have gone too far this time. Cristiano Ronaldo to Arsenal? I mean, really? It's the TV show they can't stop talking about. It's Piers Morgan Uncensored and it's back on Talk TV at 8 p.m. tonight. He's the behemoth of bruising broadcasting. Guten Morgen, Piers Morgan!
Good morning, Piers! Good morning, Piers! Alles klar, ja?
I love those intros, thank you.
Well, it's downhill from here, Vass. So, Piers, this is going to, if you keep coming on a Monday, and by the way, you're very welcome, it's just going to be a weekend roundup of sport again, first of all, before we get into your show, because I know you love your sport, you love your juice. What about Nick Kyrgios, Piers?
Well, he's sort of insufferably awful and yet compelling to watch, isn't he? He's like the most monumental brat since McEnroe, but at the moment, he hasn't got McEnroe's ability to win major tournaments. The big question is, can Kyrgios, who, without any doubt, on his day, he's a brilliant tennis player. Can he somehow barrel and abuse and mock and scorn his way to Wimbledon glory, which would be an amazing story? So I'm sort of appalled, but fascinated.
Do you like him, or does that not come into it one way or another?
I don't think I do. I don't think he's the kind of guy I would enjoy hanging out with. He just seems completely unbearable. However, I'm aware that some of your listeners will be thinking, yeah, pretty rich from you, mate, talking about unbearable Brad. So I do like the fact that he has electrified the tournament, and I do like the fact that we've got somebody that, whether you love him or hate him, you want to watch him. So I think I don't want to be hypocritical. I'm drawn to people like him in sport, even if I do find some of his behaviour towards the line judges in particular pretty repellent.
And when you say an unbearable brat, so for Kyrgios now, maybe see McEnroe back in the day, or maybe not. Did Mac have a certain charm with what he's doing? Obviously, he had this uber talent as well, or is that just us? Is that us reverse engineering what was equally as bad then as Kyrgios is doing now?
Yeah, I think it's. I don't think there's a lot of difference between them. I mean, McEnroe used to abuse line judges, didn't he? I think we've got slight rose tinted spectacles because he's become such a brilliant commentator, and he is very charming. I think Kyrgios is perfectly capable of charm. I've seen it with him. But I think that his behaviour so far in this tournament has been pretty ghastly. However, as we know in sport, the more ghastly certain people behave, if they can match it with talent, then a lot of the public find it irresistible to watch. And I think that's where we are with Kyrgios. I will certainly be tuning in today to watch him on centre court, because you never know what's going to happen with him.
Right, Piers, Chris Kamara is on the show tonight. What's going on?
Yeah, it's going to be quite a moving interview, I think, because as we all know, Chris has been one of, talking about a bully, he's been one of the greatest pundits of any sport that this country's had, I think, in my lifetime. Just a man of extraordinary exuberance and energy and dynamism. And he's been struck down by this neurological disorder which really badly affects his speech, and it's meant he's had to give up a lot of his work. So I'm going to do, I think it's going to be his first of a major television interview about it tonight. And it's just going to be very moving. I'm a huge fan of Chris. I think he's just an amazing character. And the fact that he's had this problem, and the fact he's spoken so bravely about it and so inspiringly, I think he's going to make for compelling television. But more importantly, I just think he's a guy that I want to see back on the airwaves. I'm delighted he's going to be on the show tonight.
Great. No, he does light up the screen, doesn't he? He's a very likeable, affable, a great force to have around. And Macy Gray's on the show. Now, the last time I talked to Macy Gray, it was backstage at TFI Friday. So what's going on with her and you?
Well, you know what? It's actually very interesting. So I did this a few days ago, and we held it for July 4th, Independence Day in America, because a year ago, on Independence Day, she wrote an op-ed piece in which she demanded that the American flag be changed to make it more diverse. She wanted the white to be let off white. She wanted it to be more reflective of the country. And I just was very curious, the tremendous backlash to what she said, as you can imagine, from many people in America. But she also raised an interesting debate about whether things like flags should be modernised over time, as so much else is about our culture. So I sat down with her. It was a compelling interview. She's a fascinating character. She's got, I think, one of the all-time great voices. And when we talk about this issue about race and diversity in America, about the backlash she got to the flag debate, and I actually heard her talk about her pride and love for her country, which many people thought she didn't have, it was a very moving encounter. And I just think she's a great character. I really enjoyed the interview, and I think people will when they see it.
All right, Piers, what is your day, briefly, between now and going on air tonight? Piers Morgan, Uncensored, airs on Talk TV, 8 p.m. every Monday through to Thursday, Sky Channel 526, Virgin Media 67, Freeview 237, Freesat 217, and Skyglass 508, YouTube, and live on demand on the Talk TV app and Talk.TV itself. But how what's your prep like? Is it, do you have a regular regime now? Have you fallen into a pattern?
Yeah, I do, actually. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? When you start a new thing, you sort of take a while to get into what that regime is. And I found what works best for me now. I always get up early. So I was up about 5:30 this morning. I get online, see what's going on. Then the papers arrive. That's still old-fashioned. I get 5 newspapers thudding on my doorstep. I love that sound. It's always excited me as a former newspaper editor. And I pour through them. And I look for a mixture of, you know, what are the big stories? Obviously, you've got the Tory sleeve story will be a big story tonight. But also, what are the fun stories? What's the stuff we can have a bit of a laugh with? I'm sure your team and you do the same thing. And so by the time I get to like 9 o'clock now, I do these interviews on a Monday, start promoting the show. But then I'll talk to the team at about 11 o'clock. They'll have already had their internal meetings, and we'll start to then make decisions, final calls about the running order, about a big guest and so on. And then, of course, that can all change. You can have what you think is a perfectly crafted show, and then at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, 3 hours before airtime, something breaks, which means everything changes. And I love that. You know, that to me is all about what live broadcasting should be about, the ability to suddenly pivot from a, you know, a fairly sort of routine show into something spectacular and live and exciting. That's what I love. I think you love that, Chris. I love it. You can't beat live radio, live television. It's just the beating blood of broadcasting. So I'll be thinking, great, we've got a great show, great guests, everything's lined up, and then I'll get in about 4 o'clock, half four, into the studios over in Ealing, and then we'll go through everything, and then I'll be thinking quietly, I hope something massive breaks, because that, in the end, is what I think is most exciting about the job.
All right, mate, I'll talk to you next Monday. Have a great show tonight. Piers Morgan, Uncensored, Talk TV, 8 p.m, Monday through Thursday.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Move over, Beverly Hills Cop. Stand aside. Beverly Hills 90210. For a decade and more, the world's most expensive postcode has been famous for this one astonishing show. The new season of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills is available now on Heyu. So please welcome the real housewife in chief. She puts the rich in Richards. It's Carl Richards.
Good morning, Ms. Richards. Welcome to the show.
What an exciting introduction. Wow.
How are you today?
I'm amazing. How are you?
We're always fantastic.
I can tell by your happy voices and faces.
Our demeanor, our spirit. How long have you been over here for?
I got here on the 25th.
All right, okay.
Yes.
So we have season 12. Now, if you were an LA Lakers player, that means you've been in the squad for 12 seasons.
Yeah,
doesn't it?
I like that analogy.
Because you've been in the show literally forever.
I know.
Okay, and it's
since
one of the most successful shows in the world. You know, it's a non-scripted factual entertainment show. And it was the springboard for a genre of copycat shows, similar shows. And it is massive. This show is absolutely massive. So here's my first question for you, Kyle.
Yes.
Do you feel more Beverly Hills now or before this show started?
Do I feel more Beverly Hills? I feel less. It's a funny question. I wouldn't have thought about that, but I would say less. You know, I'm born and raised there, as I've said in so many of my taglines, but I find myself, you know, I associate Beverly Hills with like everyone being dressed up and, you know, flashy. And I find myself pulling more away from that over the years. Like, if I never see a pair of lashes again in high heels, I would be happy.
So for people who haven't been to Beverly Hills and have just seen, you know, your show or other shows, you know, Beverly Hills Cop, for example, or any of those kind of shows, it's not all like that, is it? It's spectacularly beautiful and picturesque in part.
Well, it is. I mean, London is, in my opinion, a lot more beautiful. Sorry, Beverly Hills people, don't get mad at me. But yes, it is. It is beautiful. It's actually a small town. You know, of course, Los Angeles is a big city, but Beverly Hills is a small town. You kind of just, everyone knows everybody.
How did you get the gig in the first place? When was the first time you heard the phrase Real Housewives of Beverly Hills?
I was seen on a documentary talking about my nieces, Paris and Nikki Hilton. And then they said, oh, she would be great, you know, to do a Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. And they reached out to me and I said, my friend Bethany was on the New York show, but I said, I don't want to do reality or soap operas. I'm an actor, so I'm good, thanks. But then they came back to me again. They said, oh, you know, we kind of want to build this group around you. And, you know, here I am 12 years later. I thought I was doing a show for 2 months.
12 years later. How has it changed? You know, you've all changed within it. How has the show changed? Now, how has the production of it changed? The editing of it changed? The feeling of it changed?
Gosh, you know, it's everything is so different now. The world is so different now. I remember when we first started shooting, it was right after 2008 where everyone had lost all their money. And, you know, it was all of a sudden the show about opulence. And they would ask things like, well, how much did you spend on the party? And I was like, gosh, I was raised to not talk about those kind of things. But they loved to flash how much you would spend in a store. And we were all really uncomfortable with that, you know. And then it became, okay, we grew out of that. Then it was like over the top even more. And, you know, now the whole world has changed, as we all know. So, you know, with that, the show is changing. We're changing. And, you know, I think the women have grown and changed over time. I know I certainly have over these 12 years. Thank God.
And it's lovely to hear you being thoughtful and reflective about everything. Why wouldn't you be, of course? But it's just nice to hear that.
Well, you know, sometimes people, you know, think, oh, I mean, obviously reality gets a bad rap. But honestly, in these 12 years of doing the show, I look back and you really do learn a lot about yourself. I'm not just, you know, being observant about what's going on in the world, but also how you react to things. And, you know, you kind of look and think, you know, I don't really like the way that provokes me. And I don't like the way I reacted to this and that. And you do change. And, you know, I do feel like after 12 years, I've grown a lot and a better person for it.
Have you watched them all back? All the shows?
Yeah.
Because some people can't stand watching themselves. Until, even like really famous actors have never seen a thing they've done.
I think they're lying.
I think some of them are. I think some of them are, by the way.
I do.
It's so funny. We've had people in here that you will have heard of, right? Really famous people.
Like, I know, they're all lying.
Globally famous.
No,
and these are musical artists, for example. And we'll play their new song. And one person who's really famous said, please turn it down, please turn it down. And literally couldn't stand the sound of his own voice. And then somebody else said, turn it up, turn it up. And shall I tell you, I'll tell you who the second person was, Barry Manilow. He's like, Chris, turn it up. I'm Barry Manilow. I love what I do. And I loved him
I love that. Well, I mean, like, for example, last week's episode, I didn't want to watch because I was at Garcelle's birthday party and I had been overserved. Very upsetting. And I just didn't want to see. And I saw the preview and I was like, yeah, I'm you know what? I'm going off to London. I don't need to have that stress and be thinking about that.
Right.
So I didn't see it at all. And then last night we did something with Hey You where they did a screening and I watched it with an audience on a big screen. Mm. And I thought I was going to about to pass out. I was so stressed. But they were like laughing and having fun. So I'm like, okay, I'm overthinking this.
Yeah.
And then I realized it was next week's episode that I can't watch.
Oh, no. So you've got all the stress again.
So I'm actually not lying about that. I will not be watching next week's episode because I want to enjoy my time here.
Great to meet you.
You too.
Good story,
man.
Thank
you.
Good story.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
He's face down the hacker, played in a team with the hooker, and now he's off to Holcomb. This Rugby World Cup winner is the founder of Norfolk's Festival of Sport from the 12th to the 15th of August. And thanks to Sky VIP, you and your family can be there, here to make sure nobody gets left on the bench. It's the brilliant Will Greenwood.
Good morning, Will Greenwood.
Thank you. Am I right here? And you've got Rick Parfitt Jr. at your car fest. Yeah, we've got him coming to the festival. Yeah. Isn't he just awesome?
Look at you all prepared there, like a schoolboy.
Yes, well, you've got to make sure you get the right message across.
Never unknowingly underprepared.
It comes from my paranoid neurotic mother. It's great.
35-year teacher.
Great. Tell us about the Festival of Sport.
In a sentence, a packed weekend of family fun with dozens of sports and activities plus evening entertainment for the full festival vibe. We set it up inaugural year last year. We have all sorts of legends from Kevin Sinfield, Andrew Strauss, Kate Richardson-Walsh, Tamsin Greenaway. The list goes on. 24-odd sports, camping, glamping, open-air cinema, two nights of music. It's the full festival vibe. You come, you set up your camp, and it is the North Norfolk coast, which I fell in love with when I met my wife. It was our 19th wedding anniversary. Yesterday, we got married.
Congratulations.
We got married about 500 yards down the road from Holcombe. And I think if you've never been to Norfolk, it's a place you've got to go.
It's really gorgeous. You know, Vassas was slagging it off on the radio, a couple of weeks ago. Properly slagging it off.
Shame on you.
No, because we were talking about a rock festival. We went, Norfolk, rock festival? I don't think so. Barnes, 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 Barnes.
It was called Norwich Rocks, and I just thought that was
Don't go Partridge on me. Do not go Partridge on me.
Doesn't it sound a bit?
Oh, you're so stereotypical.
I know.
Open your eyes.
He's unhelpful, isn't he?
Open your mind, Vassas.
Yes. So, Norfolk, for people who don't know, Norfolk, Suffolk, the northern folk and the south folk, that's where the counties get the names from. You know, tell us about the allure of it. What you, apart from your beautiful wife, what else you fell in love with that was there?
Scenery. I've got three dogs, all rescues, and you let them loose on the beach and you go down from Hunstanton down to Thornham.
So keep many walking. Beautiful beaches.
Yeah, you go to Brancaster. There's got a great little, an old couple just in their house have a mussel pod. You stop in and they do chili mussels. And it's they've got in their back garden. They've caught them this morning. And
a mussel pod.
Yeah, yeah, like a little. You know how you get coffee. You like we walk here on over London Bridge, and you've got a little, like a tiny little horse trailer.
Yeah, yeah.
In the back of their garden, they've got a horse trailer, and they just sell mussels.
I'm so hungry.
Honestly,
I've got a fast from midday today from a colonoscopy tomorrow. I'm starving.
Yeah,
I can still eat, but I just feel like I can't. I shouldn't. Have you ever had to fast?
We tried a whole heap of things. We tried the 16:8. Fasting. So
this is like I can't eat for 24 hours. This is like proper.
Yeah, tough. I've got a great deal of respect for you, not me. I eat little and often. They reckon I've got a tapeworm the size of 17-meter tapeworm most of them. I'm always eating, yet I'm a skinny beanpole.
All right, Will Greenwood is here talking about Festival of Sport, 12th to the 15th of August in Norfolk. It's going to be, it's just great to go there anyhow. You can win tickets via the My Sky app. You can buy tickets, of course you can. Where do people go to buy tickets, Will?
Festivalofsportuk.com. It's on Instagram, it's on Facebook, and we want to make sure everyone goes, oh, it's a festival, you run a World Cup, it's all about Olympic athletes. Absolutely not all about, if we discover the next Jason Robinson, then fabulous, but actually it's just getting involved with your mum's dad's.
Right, so 24 sports.
Yeah.
So like sort of sports day weekend kind of thing.
Yeah.
Loads of fun. It can get competitive and serious for people who like a bit of that action as well. That's got good. Any prizes to be won?
When you're there, it's more about I think the prize is go away having discovered a sport you've never tried and think,
I could
be a Jedi at that.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so archery last year, we introduced 700 kids to archery who'd never, ever picked up a bow, an arrow, and they went away and we got loads of kids stayed involved in it.
I didn't get that bit of it. Okay, so you go, you're 24 sports, but in a way, it's like a tryout weekend as well.
Yeah, exactly. So the thing is, if you like your rugby, you're going to go there and go, I want to do rugby with the, like, rugby. England Rugby are down there sending some of their top coaches, some great players, and you think, I'm just going to do 8 hours of rugby. No, you're not allowed to do 8 hours of rugby. You sign up, you get five sports each day, and then you get some voluntary. So the core sports are, you know, rugby, football, hockey, netball, cricket, athletics, dodgeball's in there, boxing. And then if you want to try some options, archery, kayaking, taekwondo, trampolining, wait for this, medieval sword fighting.
Love it.
We'll be there. Judo, skipping, wheels extreme. The list goes on. We've just crammed it. They've got trampolining with just an absolute rock star of a trampolinist who was a world champion, Amanda Parker, former Great Britain. And she does a little show, and you think you go high on a trampoline, and then you watch a trampolinist go high on it, and you go, holy lords, give me a parachute.
I know. There's no bounce warehouse big enough to cope with a proper Olympic standard trampolinist. And what's interesting about everything that you're saying is that, you know, Shane Warne, God bless him, you know, cricket was his third sport because he wanted to be an Aussie Rules footballer. Yeah. And then he became a tennis professional. And then that didn't go quite as well as he wanted. So he thought he'd give cricket a go. And you never know, do you? This is the thing, Will. You just never know.
I was so lucky to play with Shane in a golf tournament at Wentworth about 6 months before he passed. And the passion he had for his cricket, you know, I was living in a caravan at the time. We were doing our kitchen up. And as I walked out of the caravan that morning, I looked and I had my lad's cricket bag was underneath the caravan. I thought, do you know what? I'm playing with Shane Warne. I'll take a cricket ball
You just never know, because it takes 5-6 hours of these sort of programs. And on about our 14th hole, there was a queue, and I thought, if not now, then when? So I pulled out a cricket ball, and I thought he's going to go, oh, what are you doing bringing a cricket ball? I'm trying to have a day off. And he then did a 15-minute monologue about, in front, got all the crowd round him and said, this is how I bowl my flipper, this is how I bowl my leggy, this fingers, this is what everything I did in order to bamboozle. And he had us eating out of a hand, and the passion was pouring out of every pore. And what we have in terms of the sports people who are coming are people who have loved their sport all their life. It's been an integral part of their life. I'll be down at Maidenhead Rugby Training Tuesday and Thursday. You'll find me there till I'm 100 years old. My dad's still going down to the Real Rugby Club at 81. We absolutely love our sport. I was brought up around it. And if I can put a festival on where kids come along and go, wow, I'm not great at cricket, but oh my God, I absolutely love boxing or taekwondo.
Yeah, or you might love boxing or taekwondo, but actually unknowingly be great at cricket.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you try those, and we've got some amazing coaches delivering all of it. And as I said, and the other thing that's interesting about for the parents who come, and most of us just give up and go, well, I haven't got time. And we see some mums going and do the netball, and there's some dad's touch. And occasionally there's occasional hamstring tweak because they think they're, you know, Ben Cohen, or you think they're legging it down the wing, and they're Henry Arundel, the kid who's just scored that wonder try for England on the weekend. But we make sure they all warm up and they go away, and then they get involved in their local clubs, and they start to get back into things that they've given up thinking perhaps they're too old. The reality is, for sport, I don't think you're ever too old.
To join Will and all that great tribal inspirational juice for tribes of all cultures, all colours, all natures, all abilities and disabilities, festivalofsportuk.com is where you need to go and where you need to be. Norfolk, the 12th to the 15th of August at Holcombe Park.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Right, we need some Sky Sports F1 light relief. Here's Crofty now.
Forget Von traps, it's Von speed traps this weekend as F1 heads to Austria. And they're all chasing Von Max, who's been in the sport since he was 16, going on 17. Red Bull's home Grand Prix is live on Sky Sports F1 from noon tomorrow. And the hills are alive with the sound of Crofty.
The hills are alive with the sound of Crofty. Morning, David.
Oh, good morning, Christopher. Morning, Vassos. Morning, Rach. How are we all this morning?
We're awesome. Can I just congratulate you? And I know you're not very good at this, but you excelled yourself, which is sort of impossible on Sunday. You and the team, you know, the whole race, the whole day, you know, it was a very tricky situation. At one point, you handled that superbly, as you've had to do before in the past, unfortunately, and hopefully you'll never have to do again in the future when the race was red flagged because of that horrific crash off the grid. Yeah. But then, you know, then we all got to witness the most exciting British Grand Prix of all time, and you were at the centre of it all, and you were wonderful, and you were actually never before underheard, knowingly underheard, Crofty. You were drowned out by the sound of the crowd.
Yeah, weren't they great? Those last 10 laps. Look, Martin and I got lucky because the racing was so good. Thank you for saying that. The crowd were magnificent. The race was magnificent. I'll let you into a little secret. It got so exciting. We have a little platform in the commentary box at Silverstone so we can see over the bench because it's a bit high. I nearly fell off the platform. I nearly lost my footing. I was dancing around so much. It was absolutely brilliant. And it's kind of day when you start out as a commentator all those years ago. And yeah, it was just brilliant. I loved it.
Well, you were brilliant. I don't know if you've heard it back, but I'm going to play it for you again now. It's amazing. Your commentary is amazing. I mean, you know, just to be excited would have been enough, but you get all the right, you choose all the right words. Where they're coming from, I've no idea. You're just channeling absolute brilliance. Here we go. But what's also awesome is the noise, the volume of the noise of the crowd. Here we go.
Perez on the inside, Charles Leclerc gives it just enough space. Can Perez squeeze past? They're going wheel to wheel towards Vale now. Who's going to be last on the brakes? Leclerc has sideline. Perez goes off the track, cuts the chicane, off goes Leclerc, through goes Hamilton. Unbelievable stuff coming out of the final corner. Perez and Leclerc going for it. Hamilton says thank you.
We can ask you, what were you saying there? Because nobody's ever heard it.
It got to the stage, so much was happening so quickly. I thought, right, channel your inner Murray here and just say in bullet points what's going on. So, you know, Leclerc goes wide, Perez forces him off, through goes Hamilton. And I just saw this silver machine making a move and thought, do you know what, let's give it large here. And do you know what, the crowd cheering as well, that just makes, I think, the commentary even better. It sounds like someone's just scored a goal, which they kind of had. And then a few corners later, Lewis sadly lost that place. But it was a brilliant end to an epic weekend. And Silverstone did not disappoint, and the fans disappoint. And every year, Chris, it's the best race of the season. But by heck, was that the best race of the season?
Yeah, without, and you know, you say you referenced Murray Walker there. That's all I could think at the time. I thought, right now he truly is the heir apparent. Or, you know, that was we witnessed the commentating coronation on Sunday officially of the microphone being passed from Murray Walker to your good self. And I don't mean that sort of, you know, with any disregard to what you've done since Murray has no longer with us anymore, but no longer doing what he did for so long. But that was just he. I know from whichever cloud he's looking or was looking down on Silverstone from, he would have been more than proud of his prodigal son. So well done, pal. That was absolutely awesome. Right, Joe Gagneux, how is he? What's the latest?
So I saw Joe yesterday. He was on the same plane as myself and the
incredible
rest of the Sky team.
That's incredible.
Coming out of Austria. Do you know what? Absolute no scratches, no ill effects. He said he woke up, he was a bit sore on Monday. He's had a few massages. Because he was a bit sore, but absolutely no damage whatsoever. And as I said to him, I said, well, I see you're 100% right as rain. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, you just pushed in the queue like any good Formula One driver would do. So there's nothing wrong with you this morning. And so we had a bit of a laugh. He said, look, you know, it was scary. It was terrifying. But he feels a very lucky man to walk away without a scratch. That could have been horrific. And once again, Chris, we should pay tribute to the FIA, to Jean Todt, who had a lot of criticism over the halo, but stood firm and knew that it was the right thing to introduce. And the halo didn't just save Joe Gagneux's life at the weekend. It saved Roy Nissany as well in the F2. Safety is absolutely paramount, and it's lovely to be able to have a chat with Joe on a Wednesday morning, rather than him still being in hospital, which could have been the case many years ago.
Oh, my goodness me. And worse, of course. But well done. Congratulations. It was absolutely awesome. Sky Sports F1 just gets better and better and better. I was with Stephen Van Rooyen, your boss, yesterday. And then I was with Dana, the new big boss, last week. And they say, you know, what do you like? I say, well, I love Lazarus Project. I can't wait for White Lotus to come back. I can't wait for Brassett to come back in the autumn. But to be honest, it's all about F1 for me. And I really mean it. And but they are as big a fans of you and what your team do as I am. You might be glad to hear when it comes to your next contract negotiation round.
That's very nice to hear.
All right. For me, this conversation was mostly about what happened last weekend. All we're going to do as far as this weekend is concerned, other than what you've just said there, is tune in to find out more about this year's amazing Formula One Grand Prix season, Sky Sports F1. When does it all kick off, Crofty?
Kicks tomorrow. Don't forget, sprint weekend. So qualifying on Friday, and sprint race on Saturday afternoon. Thing is, don't turn away, because in F1, you just can't get enough, right?
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget, you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.